It's cool story, cool story. The Wheel of Time, the ultimate fantasy. It's cool story, cool story.
I feel like we need a Steven to be already recording us when we start the conversation about are we about to press record.
I know.
Because we just valuable we had a pretty golden exchange just a minute ago that resulted in a full, like, high-pitched wheeze laugh from me.
It was enjoyable.
So, what is the most exciting thing that happened to you this week?
Oh, my God. That sounds like when you're in an office icebreaker. Let's see. The most exciting thing that happened to me this week. Whew. What's today? Today is Saturday?
It is.
Oh, are we supposed to be breaking the wall?
It's Thursday then.
Yeah. Okay. So what's the most exciting thing that happened to me? Honestly, coming by your house and watching Drag Race. I mean, what have we done? Nothing really. What about you?
I am teaching a class this fall, and the class starts next week. And so this week was kind of the, like, sprinting to the finish line moments of trying to get the class ready and all the logistics for it and coordinate all the people who are going to be, like, supporting the class. So that, like, sort of finished on Friday, and that was really exciting to sort of, like, be done with. Right. So I'm kind of excited about that. Anyway.
That's exciting.
I might edit this whole part out. I don't think that's interesting to anyone.
I think it's interesting. I had my informal, like, annual review at work this week.
How did they rate you?
They rated me very highly.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was really great. I couldn't have asked for a better better outcome. So, however, a few months into my employment here, they changed the format of things HR did. So now they'll be doing annual reviews for everybody, like, collectively, January and February. Does that make sense?
It does.
Are you making fun of me? Why are you laughing?
Well, I'm just laughing that my story that I thought was so boring about how I set up
my
class.
Oh, my God.
And then you moved into to performance evaluations. I was like, what could we talk about next? Funeral planning?
I made a shopping list the other day, but the long and short of it is I had a review. I was a little nervous, and it went great.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Oh, my gosh. And
so this is a cool story. It's the podcast where we recap Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time, and we are on book 2, The Great Hunt, and that's Matt. I'm N.
Hey.
And is that all to say? Is that everything?
I think that's the long and short of it, yeah.
All right, good. Well, we did it.
We're here. We're here with you. We're all here together.
It's so funny because on My Favorite Murder, Karen and Georgia, in the early episodes of that show, they try to do a book club with the listeners. Yeah. And then they, like, very shortly realize, like,
My Sweet Audrina.
My Sweet Audrina. A, they realize it's a, like, book about incest. But B, they're also like, we realized podcasting really is kind of a one-way platform. Like, we talk to you, and that's about it. Yeah. So you can't really have a book club on the podcast, which is kind of funny that I'm saying that, because that's essentially what this podcast is.
Right. Well, you know,
so I showed you, Karen.
We are, like, encouraging you to host your own mini book clubs.
Yes, yes, that's right. We're a good book club companion.
Exactly.
Because you can, you know.
Yeah, we're like the book club for people who aren't, like, huge participators, but they just like to be part of the group.
Right,
like,
exactly.
You don't have to talk.
They bring
back
a good, like, dip from Trader Joe's. No? Just me?
We're like a really good dip for Trader Joe's?
No, I said the person who just likes to be there, and I said, yeah, the one that, like, brings a really good dip from Trader Joe's.
I missed the first part, and I thought you compared us to a really good dip from Trader Joe's.
Listen, we could be like that. You've had the two-item dip from Trader Joe's, the lentils and the bruschetta?
No.
Yeah, I've made it.
Okay, yes. I didn't even know it was from Trader Joe's.
No, the more you know. It's really easy, super fun, really tasty, really healthy.
Hey, lentils. I love healthy. I love a lentil. So, speaking of lentils,
Yeah. Chapter 27.
Yes. Yeah, let's get to the book. Right?
Yeah.
Let's get to why we're here. All right, so chapter 27, called The Shadow in the Night. So the little icon is the Trolloc head and the little, you know, all that stuff
around
it. The
Trolloc symbols.
Yeah. So yeah. That means nothing good. So we are, if you remember from last week's reading, we had witnessed, I wrote, last week we witnessed Rachel and Ross decide to go on a break. Oh, I mean, Tom told Rand he needs a clean break from him.
Have you been watching Friends lately?
No, but it just, whenever I think of on a break, like, that's the first reference I think of.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Right?
It's iconic.
So, much in the same way, it breaks his little farm boy heart. He's just, he missed Tom, and he's so happy to see him again. He didn't even think he was alive, but it's okay. I feel bad for Rand, but I have a feeling that, you know, the weave will be wheeling. Yeah, the wheel will start to weave Tom back into their path at some point. I just it just can't be we're meeting Tom just to say hi again and return the harp.
It's a good point.
You know,
you never know.
Come on. So I'm not too sad because I could see the future. So Rand and Loyal are heading through Foregate now.
Miss Cleo.
Yeah, I'm Miss Cleo, but I'm not going to tell you to call me now.
Just like Priyanka.
Yeah, I'm just going to put I'm Miss Cleo because I have a mannequin head covered in glitter.
Poor Priyanka.
Poor Priyanka. She's beautiful. It's okay.
I think I might have to go back and rewatch Lemon as JoJo.
You have to. You have to just watch like a 5-minute video of JoJo just to see. Speaking of nightmares, Rand and Loyal are heading through Foregate now, and they're feeling a little like dejected. Rand because of the whole Tom thing, and Loyal because he was beaten by Tom's apprentice / child bride, Dina, at dice.
She's probably like 25.
Tom is described as looking like he's like in his 40s. No?
Okay. I mean, I always thought like 50. Yeah.
Yeah. Just saying, child bride. So, yes, Loyal's been losing to Dina at dice, and he noticed that he was ahead for most of the game, and when she began, she suddenly won it all back, and he wonders if she cheated or something, because everyone else around kind of was smirking as though they were sort of in on something that he wasn't privy to. And so he's kind of feeling confused and dejected, and he's hanging on that, but they continue on, and as most of the buildings ahead are all barred and closed up, it's pretty desolate up ahead as they get closer to the square, and they notice that the only thing they see up ahead is one of those, remember the little, I feel we were calling them puppets because, like, you know, you're holding them over your head, but you know the deal. So
I do.
One of those large puppets up ahead being manned by 5 people sort of just on its own coming towards them. Rand is sort of like thinking about what their next steps are going to be, and he comes to the conclusion that they can't really risk finding them here, so they can't really hang for too much longer. But as he's sort of like thinking about this, the puppeteers are closer, and surprise, this was a surprise, it is not a puppet at all, it's a real Trolloc.
I know, that freaked me out the first time I read it.
I was very surprised. I completely did not see that coming. So essentially it was 5 dark friends, we can assume, carrying a Trolloc, disguising themselves as like that little parade that we saw earlier.
Yeah.
And then as he comes to this conclusion, he has no moment to even think about it, and the Trolloc leaps towards Rand, arms outstretched. And RJ writes, "For an instant, everyone stood frozen. Then the men, the dark friends, they had to be, looked from the Trolloc lying in the street to Rand with the sword in his hands and Loyal at his side. They turned and ran. Rand was staring at the Trolloc too. The void had surrounded him before his hand touched hilt. Sidin shone in his mind, beckoning, sickening. With an effort, he made the void vanish and licked his lips. Without the emptiness, fear crawled on his skin." It's interesting to me for a couple of reasons here, because Rand enters the void without trying this time, because it was like an instantaneous reaction. He didn't even realize he was doing it. And so it was like almost instinctive, which shows like how comfortable he's getting and familiar he's getting with the oneness, or the, you know, channeling and finding the source. And so,
yeah, because remember, Maureen has talked about, like, the more you do it, the easier it is.
Right.
Or rather, the Aes Sedai have said that in their lessons.
Exactly. And that's also something Celine keeps saying about the oneness, which is essentially the same thing. So, but the thing about that is that I wonder if it's good because he's sort of, like, getting familiar with it and getting comfortable. Or is this, like, a bad thing showing, like, the taint of it has already taken over him more than we know. So I'm wondering how that'll play out. But the other thing is that he's able to resist Sidin for a moment, at least this time in the void, which is something he's been struggling with. In any event, it's enough to sort of scare off the Dark Friends because they just witnessed him slay Trolloc in no time flat. And the bad news about this, though, is that now all the Dark Friends have confirmed exactly who and where Rand is for sure, and we know that he is exposed, and time is going to be even more of the essence than it was before.
Right.
So that kind of sucks. But suddenly they can't even think about how sucky it is, because before they can even think about another thing, another Trolloc has grabbed Rand by the neck. But instantaneously, good old Loyal snatches the monster's arm and is, like, fighting until Rand falls free. God, I love Loyal. And
he's pretty great.
He is pretty great. And I've been wondering, because he's obviously, like, this very powerful being, but Ogiers don't seem like the fighting type. So I was always wondering how he would be in, like, a situation like this.
Yeah.
So it says that standing behind the boar-snouted Trolloc, Loyal had it by wrist and forearm, holding its arms spread wide, breathing hard with the effort. The Trolloc snarled gutturally in the harsh Trolloc tongue, throwing its head back in efforts to catch Loyal with a tusk. Their boots scuffled across the dirt in the street. Rand tried to find a place to put his blade in the Trolloc without hurting Loyal, but Ogier and Trolloc spun in their rough dance so much that he could find no opening. So he's freaking out because he can't do anything. He feels really helpless, and Loyal just saved his life, and he wants to do the same. And he's starting to notice that the Trolloc's weapon is getting, like, dangerously close to Loyal, and Loyal doesn't seem to be able to be handling it. And so, against his better judgment, he attempts to channel.
Yeah.
So it says, reluctantly, Rand formed the void. Sidin shone at him, pulled at him. Dimly, he seemed to recall a time when it had sang to him, but now it only drew him. A flower's perfume drawing a bee, a midden stench drawing a fly. Midden? Is that how you say it?
Midden, yeah.
Midden. What is a midden? A flower? I don't even know.
No, it's like a shit pile.
Oh, yeah, a fly, not a bee. Okay, wow. Yikes. But
yeah, it's a dunghill or a refuse heap.
Well, that is a far better way to say it.
Well, I thought you were going to say than what I said, shit
pile. Oh, no. No, I think midden is far better. The text continues after we hear about the midden drawing the fly. He opened himself up, reached for it. There was nothing there. He could as well have been reaching for light in truth. The taint slid off onto him, soiling him, but there was no flow of light inside him. Driven by a distant desperation, he tried again and again, and again and again there was only the taint. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? It's like, has like the taint completely taken over like the light in his...
He's trying to channel and failing, and all he's like feeling is sort of the, you know, slick of evil over the power, which he can't like really get a hold of.
So it's there, he's just unable to access it because of the method he's using to channel, or like the state of mind he's
in. It's like if you were trying to climb up a pole that was covered in oil.
Oh god. Yeah. So okay, that makes sense. Perfect. So Loyal is able to luckily overpower the beast ultimately, and he sends it smashing its head into a wall. Jeez. And it's upsetting to Loyal, though, because he's never killed before, and he says he cannot like it, even if it is a Trolloc. And I felt so bad. I don't know, I just...
Oh, for Loyal to, like... Yeah, his innocence is fleeting away.
Yeah.
Flitting away.
And he's so... He's just like this big teddy bear, you know, in my mind.
He's, like, so
bad.
Pure.
Yeah. And, you know, Rand feels bad, too, so he's trying to comfort him. You know, they're friends, and he doesn't like seeing him this way.
He's like, hey, buddy, he's just taking a long nap. He's going to wake up anytime.
It's like that scene in 30 Rock with the where he's there, and he's got the broom while she's over the toilet. But he is doing his best, and he's like, you know, you did what you had to do, and it's okay. And as he's trying to comfort him, they notice there's more disguised dark friends and Trollocs coming in the same method. And the intention is to get to Hurin and the Horn and back to the hotel because they have the inn, because they have no idea if Hurin or the Horn are even there. Yeah, the Super 8, the Best Western, yeah. The Hojo with the Hooters attached. So they're on their way to the inn, but like every time they try to take the correct turn, they keep getting their damn maps app keeps rerouting them.
They're like, Trolloc ahead, 30 meters.
Yeah. And they're like, damn it. So they keep having to change course because every time they're getting close to a place where they can turn and get more towards the inn, a Trolloc or a dark friend is up ahead. So they are being pursued further and further east and out of Forgate towards the open world. If they get out there, they realize they're going to have no cover and they'll be like sitting ducks. But Rand notices up ahead or out in the distance, there's a hill with these large walls and buildings within them. As they're planning to go towards it, we find out that this is actually the Illuminator's chapter house that we were talking about in a previous chapter. We also find out that while, okay, great, Illuminators sounds fun, right?
Yeah,
turns out
make big pretty
yeah, they just like to like celebrate and have a good time, come on,
right, super chill,
let's celebrate. Exactly. Well, it turns out they don't much care for intruders, and Loyal supposes that anyone who attempts to enter their walls, even the king, is open to being killed. Wow. I would go inside as well. But I just think, like, what is with the Illuminators? What is the problem?
They're very secretive.
Jesus. All right. Well, listen.
Can't steal their trade secrets.
I guess so. I guess if you're spreading that much joy to other people, there's a cost.
It's like Disneyland. If you go backstage, Mickey will shank you.
Ooh. You in the underground underground tunnels of Disney World? Have you ever heard about that?
No.
There's an underground in Disney. I don't know if they have an
Disney
World.
I mean, that makes total sense.
Too, but it's like where all the cast like enters and exits
and
forth. Gets to rides and attractions and changing rooms. I used to have a friend who worked in Disney, and she was like a character aide. She was a bunch of different things, but she would tell us like stories all the time about like how awkward it was when like her first trip down to that like tunnel to get from one place to another, like on break, when she like had to walk past like two Peter Pans kissing.
Oh my God.
She's like, the illusion ruined instantaneously.
Oh, that's funny.
Right? Can you imagine?
Yes, I can. And I will.
Do you need a minute? Oh my gosh. Interesting though, right? I can't.
I would pay the price of the park ticket just to go down there for the day and watch what happens behind the scenes. I think that would be so interesting.
Oh my God, totally. Totally.
There's got to be some rule of like no footage or anything, right? Like there's not
there
a documentary that takes you behind the scenes.
Okay. No, there's a like a strict no footage rule, and like there's a lot of
Like, and I think that's true.
I remember there was like a big controversy because someone who worked at Disney like put a video on YouTube of many years ago of like a bunch of cast members in their costumes.
Oh,
sexually
I remember
kind
that
of stuff, and it was like this big deal. Like, how dare they? You know. So, speaking of high tense situation, the tension is high here as well because
yes,
they could be killed, certain death.
They sure could,
or likely death, as you said.
Yeah.
So
exactly,
we are suddenly cut by the calm voice of Celine, and they're like hiding around the corners and things. Celine's like, "Hey, sup?
Oh, hey guys."
Yeah. Unbothered completely, and she's like casually teasing them for getting themselves into trouble. And you know, she sees what they're heading towards, and she agrees that this might be a good idea. Rand, she says something to the effect of like, Rand has been doing pretty well of handling himself in sticky situations. And at this point, what do they have to lose? So more Trollocs are on the way, and as they travel onward towards the wall, they find themselves before entryless, tall wall about twice as high as Loyal. So they're not really sure what they're going to do. It's the middle of the night. They're being pursued. And Celine is like, well, you could just go in there. And kind of points to like a dark shape on the wall. That
It's kind of like if Wile E. Coyote like painted a thing on the side of the tunnel. She's like, you know, like a big flat. If it was a cartoon, there would be like a big flashing arrow pointing at it.
Exactly. Or it's like in Beetlejuice when they just draw with the chalk on the wall to get to the other to the land of the recently deceased.
Yes.
Yeah, you just go in there. And all of a sudden there's like this dark shape, and Rand notices he can't even tell if it's a door or not, but as they approach it, sure enough, lets them right in. So they get into the door and they realize that as he like shuts it behind him, he's hoping he can lock it, and there's like these slats on the door where like a bar would go, but there's no bar in sight, not even like broken or something. So that's a little alarming and unusual to Rand. To me, I mean, do I need to say more about how I don't trust Celine?
I mean, just say a little something.
What did you do, Celine? You did something to that. You made it disappear. You're an Aes Sedai. After these chapters, I'm leaning even more back towards her being Black Aja or Lanfear. Yeah.
Okay.
Because there's just some other things that happen. But anyway, so there's an example. And she's kind of being like very mysterious with Rand. So he like wraps her in his cloak because she's dressed in like this bright white dress that, you know, that she brushes all the time. And so he doesn't want her to stand out in the night, but she's just casually like nothing. She does not care. Again, this is the second indication in this chapter that Celine has no problem seeing in the dark whatsoever, her finding this mysterious door. So anyway, they are now behind the walls of the Illuminator's chapter house, and they're in this very long alleyway between these two long windowless wooden buildings, and they proceed the whole length of the upward slope ahead. And as they approach the clearing, they're sort of standing back, like looking around the corner. They don't want to like make themselves too visible. They're pretty afraid of what may happen to them in here, but they're equally as afraid of what may happen to them if they spend too long in this alleyway, since they couldn't bar the door behind them. And they notice one building that stands out that has windows on it, and they're illuminated, so there's people inside. So they're hiding around the corner, and suddenly a man named Tammuz.
I would say Tammuz.
Tammuz.
Tammuz. Tammuz is probably sure. Let's go.
I'm gonna go
with
Tammuz. So a man, because the other one's hard for me to say. So a man named Tammuz in baggy yellow embroidered clothing emerges to the clearing with a woman named Aludra or Alundra.
Aludra. Yeah.
Aludra.
Aludra.
And she's in a green ornately worked dress, and she has many short braids, it says. And do you picture those as like cornrows or like loose braids?
Cornrows.
Cornrows? Okay. And so
P.S. Tammuz is an ancient Mesopotamian god.
Oh, really?
I'm going to see if I can hear it somehow.
Any luck?
It's like a fucking musical bullshit. Oh, here we go. The month of Tammuz? Okay, say the word.
What are you watching? Are you watching something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, God, this is so frustrating. Hang on. I like have to hear it now.
Well, now, I mean, I'm invested.
Tammuz.
Tammuz?
You were right.
Oh, yeah. Yay.
Tammuz. That was worth like 10 minutes of my silence while I looked for videos, right?
I feel good about it because it proved me right.
Which you love nothing. That is your favorite thing in the world.
Who doesn't love to be proven right? Come on.
I mean, some of us enjoy it, but we don't seek it.
Oh my God, the drama. So anyway, Tammuz, as I originally had said, Tammuz is with Aludra now, and they are sort of arguing a little bit. Oh, no, they're not arguing yet. They're getting along. The end.
And that's the end of chapter 27.
And the book.
And everybody was friends.
So, no, I'm sorry. They're setting up for something. He's assuring her that everything is set for whatever celebration they're going to be setting off fireworks for. And she also asks him if everything is all locked up and they're all safely secured in, if all the doors are barred, and he says of course, and we know this is untrue. However, he probably has no idea about this because Celine obviously got rid of that bar. So they sort of move on. They are now out of sight again, back in the building with the windows. And Rand is studying the courtyard, and he sees all of these upright tubes with long cords coming from them. And he recognizes that these are fireworks. He doesn't know a lot about them. The only thing he knows of them is
and
that
they... And then Katy Perry pops around the corner and asks Rand if he ever feels like a plastic bag.
Like a plastic bag. I just wanted to, again, just say how amazing that performance was.
Oh my God, the paper bag or plastic bag dress that I did.
Yes.
I love that number.
It's the best.
I was just looking at the dress that's hanging up in my garage still.
That is, that's like iconic. That is like forever going to be an iconic moment. So they're surrounded by fireworks. He doesn't know anything about fireworks other than the the lyrics. And then the melody.
Was that what your note actually said?
No. I just can't get off. I didn't even think of Katy Perry fireworks somehow. Thank God they're called Illuminators and not like fireworkers or something.
Fireworkers?
Yeah. Fireworkers sounds like if it was like an off-brand cereal, like what they would call it instead of fireworks. You know? Like Lucky Charms to Marshmallow Mateys.
Yeah. Yes. Oh God, Marshmallow Mateys. Yeah. Those were weird.
I thought they were all right, but yeah, they were weird.
You were coming off of keto.
Yeah, I was.
Anything would have been amazing.
I mean, I saw something that looked like Lucky Charms that I can eat. Hello. Hello. Thank you. I've been missing marshmallows. Maybe that's the episode.
This is the sad confessions portion of the podcast.
I really have been missing.
Okay. Pull yourself together. I don't think I've ever missed marshmallows are gross.
I love them so much. You don't like marshmallows?
I really don't.
Oh,
I mean,
big mistake.
Huge. I'll handle them. Like, if you give me a warm brownie with warm marshmallow with, like, fudge on top, I'll definitely enjoy that a lot. But, like, just eating a marshmallow other than Lucky Charms marshmallows is unacceptable.
Oh, no. I love marshmallows. I love marshmallows in hot chocolate. I love, like, Rocky Road.
I do like that.
I love s'mores. No, I love...
That's okay.
I love marshmallows in toasted marshmallows on their own. Toasted marshmallows. No?
Yeah, they're okay.
I even love, and I know you're just going to like kill me, but I love Peeps. I love marshmallows.
My mom loves Peeps.
Huge fan. So Rand. So they got fireworks around them. And
I feel like that's the first time we've had a good food rant in a while, though.
It is. We did talk a lot about food last episode because they actually had a meal. Oh, wait. Okay, we talked about grapes for a million years last episode.
We did. Oh, yeah. Okay, don't let me forget. We have corrections to talk about.
Oh, with grapes?
Yes.
Okay, I can't wait. Okay, we'll do it. Yeah. Speaking of corrections, Rand knows nothing about fireworks. He only knows that they go off and sometimes they're in the air, it said, which I thought was weird that he knows more about them going off on the ground than in the air. The one thing he does know about the fireworks is he knows that these cords that are coming out of them are actually fuses, and he knows that that's how they go off, is just lighting a fuse. Oh my God, I have like a constant cough today.
Constant coughing. So, if that sounds really bad, you have my permission to edit it out.
We'll see. If it sounds really bad, it's especially staying in. So
you know what I'm still really upset about?
What?
Is in an episode of My Favorite Murder, maybe like in the first 75 episodes or so, suddenly Karen says, like they're having their normal conversation, whatever. And then suddenly Karen says, I'm feeling really weird about that period story I shared. Can you edit that out? And George is like, no, it's the most amazing story. Da, da, da. And we still don't know what it is.
Oh, man.
It breaks my heart.
That does break my heart because so often they say, like, can you please edit that out? And they leave it in.
Yes.
Oh, bummer. You should write in.
I should. Karen, please share your period story. Give us the unedited version. Because they're doing these quilt episodes now. Oh my God, I'm going to tweet her right now and tell her in a tweet.
Is that like a... Never mind.
Twitter twote.
Oh my God.
Ooh,
oh, this is something.
God, what's happening? Okay.
So you're going to tweet Karen.
I'm going to tweet Karen right now.
Okay. So once the coast is clear and they realize like they are free of these illuminators, they want to get to a door that they can escape from at the end of one of these alleyways, but they're having a hard time figuring out how they're going to get across. They're being as careful and quiet as possible, and there's these racks holding things, and there's all these firework tubes. He's basically treating all surfaces like they're like lava or paper, like tiptoeing, Loyal is trying his best, but he is an ogier. He's very big.
Yeah, he's not necessarily like dainty and delicate right. ballerina.
No, this is not Swan Lake.
Although now I'm going to picture him in a tutu in this
scene. Oh, me too. And so he is doing pliés and little
grand jetés. Yes.
He's doing his best, and he's making it work. Celine is, again, like I said, despite having the cloak, she's just wandering, bravely marching along, white dress exposed with every step, no care in the world. Things are going okay, no one's looking, so they're fine. And then Loyal accidentally knocks over one of these racks, and it's like in slow motion, like, no! And one of these smoldering sticks that was being held in the racks is, they're all come rolling out, and one of them rolls across one of the fuses, of course, and lights a firework yep. that, of course, explodes into the sky and causes this uproar in the windowed building. Obviously, Rand and Loyal are freaking out. Celine probably doesn't even care, but they are outside, and their best plan is to like stand against the wall and be as still as possible
because they're in Jurassic Park and the raptor is about to come around the corner.
Right. It's like, when has that ever worked, really? Like, in, but hey, this is the best shot they got. Let's just stand against the wall. Maybe it's dark enough, maybe they'll be so consumed with the front and then they'll be able to escape. And despite this not being a cartoon, Celine says, "Sometimes, if you're very still, no one can see you at all." Interesting, Celine. Kind of reminds me of how, you know, Moraine was able to shroud them when they were traveling. And what's Moraine have in common with Celine? Anyway, so the Tinkers are, not the Tinkers, the Illuminators. I kept wanting to write Tinkers throughout this whole section, though.
You know, honestly, they could have combined those two groups for this series.
I guess so.
The Tinkers and the Illuminators.
But they're
be the
so
same.
Different, though, in the way they're behaving, at least for right now. But I don't know. I guess to be continued, maybe. So
I'm just thinking, for simplicity's sake on the show, if we combined them, we wouldn't lose a lot.
Oh, okay.
If you disagree with me, feel free to send in an email and scream at me, and I will happily dictate your screaming on our next episode.
You know, I disagree with you, but I'm not going to scream at you. Because I really like the Tinkers.
Okay, that's fine.
I really
like
the Tinkers.
That's the first time you haven't screamed at me when you've disagreed with me, so I'm enjoying the change of pace.
That was very quick. Listeners, I will not be editing that out, and I will not be editing any breaks in there. That was very quick.
Thank you.
Yes. Anyway, the non-Tinkers, the Illuminators, are looking at the result of Loyal's mistake, and they don't notice our little gang. Interesting.
Suspicious.
Yeah, very suspicious.
This is a very Scooby-Doo chapter of the book.
100%. Very, like, sitcom-y. Like, it's very sister-sister, like, oops. It's very That's So Raven. That's what it is.
It's very, like, suddenly somebody would be like, you know, like, stop shouting. And somebody would be like, I'm not shouting.
Exactly. Or someone would...
All the lights would go on.
Someone would be trying to get someone's attention by like gently kicking them, and they'd be like, why are you kicking me? So we witnessed this sort of equally as funny exchange between Aludra and Timuz, because she's furious at him, and she's like, you great pig, your mother was a goat. One day you will kill us all. Like, damn girl, harsh.
And your father smelt of elderberries.
He promises it's not his fault. He's like, I didn't do it. And she's like, whatever. The king will have to be okay with it. We'll have one less firework, and it's gone off early. So whatever. He'll just have to be okay with it. In so many words. That's what I'm getting from her. And so they leave. They go back inside. And Rand thinks, wow, we were so lucky. And Celine says, it is said great men can make their own luck. And he says, will you stop that?
Yeah.
And I was like,
shut up.
Like, that was the most relatable Rand moment in the whole series so far.
And this would be the moment in the cartoon where he would impersonate her and get louder and louder and louder until they would be discovered again and all the lights would go on again.
Exactly. And then we'd cut to commercial as they both like looked up.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. And then they look at each other.
Yeah.
And back at the camp. Anyway. Yeah. So calm down, Celine. Amen, Rand. And just then, Loyal points out there are three Trollocs starting to emerge in the alleyway that they entered from before. Celine says quietly, "These people may kill you if they take you. The Trollocs surely will. But perhaps you can slay the Trollocs too quickly for them to make an outcry. Perhaps you can stop the people from killing you to preserve their little secrets. You may not want greatness, but it will take a great man to do these things." Rand tells her not to sound so happy about it, you know? And she says pretty angrily, "Your greatness...
Our lives are in danger, and if you could focus on that and not how great I am,
right, and
that would be great."
And if you... She's just so calm and just like, hey, listen, you have two options. You could die. You might die this way too, but you got to be a great man to do great things. And and he's like, don't sound so happy about it. And she says, "Your greatness will make me happy. Perhaps I should leave you."
These chapters with Celine are the equivalent of in Ocarina of Time, where you had to save the Princess Rudo from Jabu Jabu's mouth, and she was a dick to you the whole way.
Oh my God.
Just trying to save her.
I do remember that. But that's exactly... She's just laying it on so thick and so obnoxious this whole time. But that is this sort of like persuasiveness that she keeps pushing towards him is what makes me feel like, okay, you are, again, not to be trusted, and I think you're like a little bit more nefarious than I was sort of coming around. But
yeah,
now I'm back leaning towards like, okay, she's all up on his jock. And so she says, your greatness will make me happy. Perhaps I should leave you to find your own way for a time. If you'll not take greatness when it is in your grasp, perhaps you deserve to die. He ignores her. Amen. And and he starts to formulate a plan because they got lucky, but they're not going to get so lucky again with these Trollocs ahead. And so he sends Loyal to guide Celine down an alleyway. And if there's a door at the end of it, call to him and hoist her over. If not, just hoist her over the wall and escape yourself, and I will take care of the Trollocs somehow. Don't worry about it. And of course, he's thinking he's going to have to channel, which he's not looking forward to, A, because he hates channeling, and B, because he couldn't do it before. But they heed his words, and he reasons that there has to be another way. There has to be another way that wouldn't require channeling, and he has this bright idea. I guess you could say he's feeling illuminated.
No.
I knew it was a stretch. He grabs a smoldering stick and he darts out, lighting a firework that is aimed towards the Trollocs. And suddenly he's knocked back by the explosion and the base it's in. And when he looks up, the Trollocs are gone. There's smoke, and so is the wall behind them. So the firework went off, and success, it seems. But you just made a fuss. And what a fuss he made, because now he sees most of the tubes around him are knocked over. And there's a big ruckus inside the building because they know what's going on. So he runs down the alley towards Loyal. And he's noticing that Loyal is up ahead, but he doesn't see Celine. He's hearing everyone behind him in this like pandemonium. It's like everyone's freaking out. It's like I'm feeling it even as I'm talking. Like the building, you know? And so all the illuminators are yelling at each other, trying to figure out where whoever did this went. And Celine, like I said, is missing. Loyal says she went back and he couldn't stop her even though he tried. And so before Rand even has a chance to foolishly go back and do his, you know, hero thing, Loyal grabs him and says, there's nothing we can do. We got to get out of here. There's nothing you can do to go save her if she's in there. So he guides him back to Fort Gate, and luckily, there's no Trollocs in sight this time. So they finally return to the inn, and they're finally relaxed. And Quail, the innkeeper, hands them an envelope. He's assuming it's going to be another invitation, but he recognizes the little seal is obviously Celine's, the little white seal with the moon and stars. Quail says it was given to them by a mysterious older woman. He knows it's Celine somehow. So who is this older woman? We don't know. I wonder. He immediately runs up to the room and he sees Hiran in the horn or there, but he's like, hi, hey, I gotta read this letter. So he rips it open and it says, when I think I know what you are going to do, you do something else. You are a dangerous man. Perhaps it will not be long before we are together again. Think of the horn, think of the glory, and think of me, for you are always mine.
The short version of that is Gia Gunn. Well, what you wanna do is not necessarily what you're gonna do.
Exactly. And it says that the exact quote is, are all women crazy? Rand demanded of the ceiling.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have been there. How many times have you like just been so incensed by something that you finally get alone and like you're just like yelling at the ceiling?
Yeah, like what is the deal with my right? life?
So anyway, Rand is still in bed and he's staring at the chest that contains the horn and he's wishing Ingtar would shake a leg. And the chapter ends. And that's it.
Great.
Thank Yay. You. And I just have to say, Celine.
I think you just said thank you.
Well, you said great.
Oh, I did say great. Okay. I guess I was saying like great that. Yeah.
Anyway. I thought you were saying great job, but I guess you don't really feel that way about me. But what I was going to say was that Celine saying at the end of that letter, think of the glory and think of me, for you are always mine. My two thoughts are A, you are always mine is very Baal Zaman talk and the Dark One talk, like I will always have you. So was this actually indeed left by Celine, or was this mysterious older woman just using Celine's seal, or was Celine indeed this mysterious older woman? I don't know. I'm really reaching here because I really believe that this woman was Celine somehow, this mysterious older looking woman. But
could be.
And if that is true, if it is Celine, and she is saying, for you are always mine, I think that that's what made me feel like, oh my God, maybe she is actually Lanfear. Maybe I was right. So that's where I'm at.
Well, we'll read and find out.
We sure will. Okay, and so while we take a quick second to prepare for the next chapter, I just wanted to remind everybody to find us out there on social media. If you like what we're doing, we would love to hear from you, and we would love for you guys to help us out by subscribing and rating and reviewing us. Doing that helps us so, so much get more visibility, and it helps us get our podcast out to more people and to share something that we really love, love, love doing with as many people as possible, and hopefully, you know, build our community. So please, please find us on any podcasting platform you like to listen to podcasts on, and rate, review, subscribe, and then find us on social media and talk to us. We're on Twitter at CoolStoryPod1, CoolStoryPod and then the number one. We're on Instagram at CoolStoryPod, and you can always email us at CoolStoryPod@gmail.com. And that brings us to End's next chapter.
Next is chapter 28. A new thread in the pattern. And the sigil for this chapter is a wolf, which tells us it's a Perrin chapter.
Very excited.
Good. I'm excited too for you.
Right? We haven't seen them in so long.
We haven't seen them in a few chapters, yeah. Well, when last we left, they were on the hunt for Red October. And by that, I mean Rand.
That's a good name for him. He's a redhead, right?
Red hair. Red October.
I like that.
Thank you. So we're told that Matt is starting to look a little paler and sickly, and that Varen's kind of been checking on him a couple of times a day. So Matt's not doing hot. He's fading fast. And Perrin is starting to think that Varen must kind of know about Rand, just based on the question she asked Ingtar and the way she's behaving and asking after Rand. He thinks she kind of knows he can channel.
Mm-hmm.
So Ingtar asks Perrin, apparently for the 85th time, what the wolves have told him, because Perrin kind of snaps at him and says, someone or something attacked the Dark Friends in the night and killed those Trollocs we found. The wolves call him, or it, Shadow Killer. I think it was a man, but they wouldn't go close enough to see clearly. They're not afraid of the Shadow Killer. This is, or awe is more like it. They say the Trollocs now follow Shadow Killer, and they say Fain is with them. Even after so long, the remembered smell of Fain, the feel of the man, made his mouth twist. So the rest of the Dark Friends must be too. So Ingtar is trying to figure out what Shadow Killer could be, because he's seen, you know, awful things in the Blight. But Perrin thinks it definitely is not a Trolloc or a Fade. And obviously we know it's Rand. Suddenly, one of the soldiers notices an Aiel man in the rocks ahead, and Maesima, being super cool and level-headed and not at all reactionary, immediately lowers his lance and charges. But Ingtar manages to like command him to stop in time. And the Aiel man says, I have no pipers to play the tune, he announced with a smile, but if you wish the dance. And there's kind of like a sense that he's ready to fight. It's like when the fighter is like sort of bouncing right in Street Fighter.
Yeah, like their right before, their neutral stance where they're just kind of like
yeah, their neutral stance right before fight.
Yes.
And then he says his name is Urien of the two spire sept of the Rain Aiel. He is a red shield. Perrin notes that he looks just like Rand.
Uh-huh.
And Matt kind of thinks maybe Ingtar's right. Maybe Rand is an Aiel. But they're both like, but it doesn't change anything. He's still Rand. Like, it's all fine. And Varin then rides up and the Aiel man says, wise one, my water is yours. And she asks why he calls her that. And he says that you have the look of those who have made the journey to Ruidian and survived. The years do not touch the wise ones in the same way as other women or as they touch men. And Varin suddenly gets kind of an excited look on her face. By the way, I was on Twitter the other day and somebody was talking about like fan casting for Varin.
Oh, okay.
And somebody posted that the way they always pictured Varin was Octavia Spencer.
Oh, okay.
And now I'm like, I used to think Kathy Najimy, and that would still be a great choice, but I can definitely see Octavia Spencer playing this character. It would be really good.
Yeah, even that moment exactly, like where she got excited to be in the presence of someone who knew more.
Definitely. And they ask Urien if he's seen any Trollocs, and he says, Trollocs here? It is one of the sign the prophecies speak of. When the Trollocs come out of the Blight again, we will leave the threefold land and take back our places of old. And so basically we learn that what the Aiel call the threefold land is what everybody else calls the waste, which is their homeland. And it's a really like rough climate that's kind of turned them into hard people. And he says that they were sent there as a punishment for their sin, which Matt asks, what sin? And Urien says he doesn't really know. Only the wise ones and the clan chiefs who have been to Ruidian know what that sin was, and they won't speak of it. And so Varin asks him about Ruidian, and he says he can't talk about it and calls her Wise One again. And she says that she is Aes Sedai. And Urien kind of looks fearful or terrified and says that he can only tell her what is known to all, that Ruidian lies in the lands of the Gen Aiel, the 13th clan. I cannot speak of them except to name them. None may go there save women who wish to become Wise Ones or men who wish to become clan chiefs. Perhaps the Gen Aiel choose among them. I do not know. Many go, few return, and those are marked as what they are, wise ones or clan chiefs. No more can I say, Aes Sedai, no more. And Varin just kind of looks at him a bit, and he asks if she will slay him now. And she's kind of like, huh? No?
Why? You want me to?
What? And so he says that one of the old prophecies says that if we ever fail the Aes Sedai again, they will slay us. I know your power is greater than that of the wise ones. Then he kind of like laughs mirthlessly and says, bring your lightnings, Aes Sedai. I will dance with them. And she says, I'm not going to kill you unless you mean to harm me with your talk of dancing. By the way, that was me saying this beginning of the sentence and then turning it into the quote.
Yeah, that was good.
So she doesn't say, like, I'm not going to kill you.
I'm not going to kill you or anything.
In a Valley Girl accent. I'm not going to kill you.
You know what this moment reminds me of? This like back and forth where he keeps being like, okay, you can kill me now. You can slay me now. And she's like, I'm not going to do that. Did you ever see that SNL skit with Kristen Wiig where she... There's like a fancy dinner party and they ask John Hamm, the guest star, they ask him to play the piano. And he's like, oh, I'll play a song. And then Kristen Wiig's character is like, oh, don't make me sing. Don't make me sing. I don't want to sing. And no one the entire time ever asks her, but she just keeps piping in. Oh, you're going to make me sing. You're going to make me sing. I'm going to have to do it. So good. He's like, kill me now. Oh, just kill her. Me. It's okay. Yeah, I'll take your lightning. And she's like, I don't want to kill you.
Yeah.
Now I do.
It's fine. So Varin asks him why he's so far from the waste. And he says that he's searching for a man, he who comes with the dawn. And he saw their party and thought they might have heard events that would herald him. She says, a man. And RJ writes, Varin's voice was soft, but her eyes were as sharp as daggers. What are these signs? And Urien says that he will come from the west, beyond the spine of the world, but be of our blood. He will go to Ruidian and lead us out of the threefold land. He took a spear in his right hand and draws a symbol in the dirt, which is a circle with a sinuous line through it. And he says, it is said that under this sign, he will conquer. Varin, like, pretty quickly scuffs out the drawing and then says that she cannot tell him where that man is and has not heard has heard no signs or portents to guide you to him. And so Yurian says that he will continue his search and basically, you know, jogs on out of there, herkies his way out of the stage left. And everyone starts packing up to hit the road. And Matt asks Perrin if he thinks Yurian was talking about Rand. And Perrin says, I don't know, like, everything's been crazy since we got mixed up with Aes Sedai, as though this has anything to do with them at the moment.
Right.
Jerk. Hating on my Aes Sedai that I love. And so RJ writes, softly, as if to herself, Varen spoke, still staring at the ground. It must be a part, and yet how? Does the Wheel of Time weave threads into the pattern of which we know nothing? Or does the Dark One touch the pattern again? Perrin felt a chill. And that's the end of chapter 28, Woo! A new thread in the pattern. So we met our first Aiel.
We met our second Aiel, maybe.
Our second? Rand. Oh, I see. If you're saying Rand.
Yeah, that chapter just gave me a million questions. Now, I just don't even know.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, it was in a good way. Do you want to
talk about them? Like, did you write them down or are you just questioning?
The only thing I wrote down was that I wanted to mention that what I really liked about your chapter especially was the way Robert Jordan sort of wrote that conversation between Varen and Yurian. It was interesting to be introduced to like these new ideas, these new thoughts, this new group of people, and sort of like a lot of their traditions already just from this conversation. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was just very clever. Yeah. It was really clever the way it was written.
Yeah, it was like, right, because it wasn't like somebody saying, here are all the things you need to know about the Aiel. It was sort of like discovery through conversation.
Exactly. It was like an organic, It felt like a very organic conversation, and it didn't feel like a gleeman is telling a tale or something. So I just really loved that section. The main two questions that came up in my head was sort of like what I guess Varen was pondering at the end was, is this a new thread in the path? Like, I don't know if she was talking about Yurian or what Yurian said Rand is prophesized to do in their lore, you know? And so I just wonder, like, yeah, again, is that just a new, you know, the wheel weaving as it weaves? I'm just so curious to find out what's going to go on with the whole Aiel tale he just told. Like, is that really going to happen? And it's obviously Rand. Come on, boys. I mean, I wonder if it's Rand. Come on.
Right. A like suspicious man that they're looking for who is said to be of the Aiel. Yeah,
it's Sen. It's Sen Buie.
It's Sen Buie.
But yeah, I'm just so excited. Your chapter was like I said, we haven't seen this group in a while and I've just been dying to know where they F and R even. And so,
They're getting close. Cause remember Rand was like at Kingslayer's Dagger.
Yeah.
And so they're like seeing that. So they're not far from Rand.
God, I just want them to get there. I was going to ask you wanted me to remind you of corrections.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Because I would have forgotten. I was doing a bad Irish cartoon accent, I guess.
With like a little bit of pirate.
Yes. You know, a bad cartoon Irish pirate. That was the accent that I was aiming for with that.
That's the title. Okay. That's the title. A bad cartoon Irish pirate.
Bad cartoon Irish pirate.
Oh, man.
So Pythos was kind enough to send us in some updates and corrections to some of the things we talked about. So first, I had asked if there are any Choose Your Own Adventures for adults. They said they didn't know of them specifically, but they do know some from the 80s and 90s written for older teens, specifically two British series, Joe Dever, D-E-V-E-R.
Okay.
Joe Dever's Lone Wolf and Steve Jackson / Ian Livingstone's Fighting Fantasy were Choose Your Own Adventure Dungeons and Dragons hybrids.
Oh, okay.
So there's one option. Cotton Candy Grapes were first crossbred from Concord and Common Green Grapes in 2011. They have about 12% more sugar content than a regular grape, hence the cotton candy taste.
They are so good.
I can't wait to try them.
I'm really glad that they were indeed not like genetically altered.
I mean, like crossbreeding? I don't know.
I think that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay. I thought so. Thank you. Okay, Pythos, you just like made my brain restored to at least 10% power.
Okay. I'm ready.
So, okay. In chapter 26, when Rand gives Rand gives Tom back his harp, Tom says, at least you had the sense not to try to keep it in tune. Pythos writes, Chapter 26 has one of the more famous changes or corrections between editions in the series. In the original printing, Tom complains that Rand hadn't kept his harp in tune while he had it. And I'm so grateful you said that, because that was always my childhood memory, was that Tom complains and says something like, you could have at least tried to tune it, or could have at least done something. And when I read it this time, which I think is the first time I've read it on the Kindle, because I gave away my
paper copies,
copies, I was like, gosh, I remember that scene differently. So I feel validated that I had a legit reason for thinking so.
Nice.
Some readers have pointed out that old medieval-style harps could warp if they were left tuned for long periods of time without use due to tension on the frame. So it was changed in later versions to Tom expressing relief that Rand didn't tune it. Because it makes more sense with, like, the care of a harp.
I love that. I love that they cared enough about that tiny detail to change it.
I know. That's intense. Yeah. And then Pythos also says that I was right, there is no war in Ba Sing Se. And then they included a picture of the Ba Sing Se person in Avatar. So
it's funny, I actually looked that up myself afterwards because I was dying to know, because it was killing me, because I was very disappointed in myself. Yeah. And I think it was because, did you watch Legend of Korra? You did watch Legend of Korra.
I did. I was, and they're back in Ba Sing Se.
Yes, I was talking about Ba Sing Se in Legend of Korra when they have the queen in charge.
Gotcha.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. I was going to ask you what your favorite part of the book was. Or the favorite part of the chapters were.
No, I think my favorite part of these chapters is definitely the moment with the puppet. Like, it was just such a, it was one of those moments where you could see it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just so perfectly done where you really didn't see it coming, you know?
Totally.
Like, it was such a surprise to me the first time that I read it. And you can see it happening, like, in TV. Like, you know, the, like, suddenly the poles drop and, like they see them or hear them hit the ground and look, and there's, like, this frozen moment where they don't even realize what's happening, and then you as the viewer are like, oh my god. So I'm actually, I just liked that moment, and I like the, I like that moment of them trying to make progress in one direction, but they're slowly being sort of, like, herded in another direction by the Trollocs coming down the streets in different directions. Like, it's a really well-written suspense chapter, 100%. I think. So I liked that a lot.
I agree. I think my chapter was very, like, visual. Like, I could totally see everything. I could feel the intensity, like, from the moment that you mentioned with the Trolloc. I envision it in my head every time we talk about it. That's how much I could see it. My favorite part would be the time with the Illuminators, but for the same reason that you had for yours.
Because
the suspense was so high, and I could feel it. And it's like this new group of people that we've heard about, but we haven't really met yet. And so I really enjoyed that whole scene in there, because I could just visualize it, and I could see it in the show. Like, I can't wait to see these two, like, crazy looking characters arguing with each other, and them sneaking around and being shocked that they can't be. I'm looking forward to it. So
yeah. Ooh, I'm excited. It's gonna be good to watch the show.
It's getting exciting because it's like,
it's happening.
It's really getting there, you know. I was worried that, you know, pandemic would completely halt production, but it seems like it only put it back a little while, I was reading. So
yeah, cool. Well, that is the end of our episode for today.
Yeah. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you loved every moment of it as much as we loved making it.
Do the social media things and do the reviews, and we will see you next time.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.